Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures Podcast. We're here to bring you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. And feeling much better this week, I am your host, Sean Hayes. And this is episode 261 of the 8-Bit Adventures Podcast. So, again, apologies for the short episode last week. Just, I don't know, had a doctor's appointment last week to find out what's going on, with me. They basically said, here, take some antihistamines. And like, that was it. But you know, we're on 4 weeks now of problems. but you know, it is getting a bit better. But you know, it's still not completely, I'm not completely healthy. So, as you can hear from having to clear my throat all the time. Okay. So, but that said, feeling much better, which is good because we have a whole bunch of, lot of news this week and a bit of a big, big news that came out today. So very timely for once. They announced it like early on in the day so that there was time to like react to it and look into it and research it and everything, as opposed to, you know, like dropping it on Thursday. So, you know, like right after the podcast came out and then, you know, having to wait like a whole other week to report on it. But yeah, so very excited about this news. And definitely we got some big news in our quick fire news section as well. So a little something for everybody for movie fan. Well, you know, movie / TV fans, tabletop fans, PC gaming fans, some Sony fans. You know, not always got something for the Sony fans, but this time we do actually, funny enough, we don't have anything for Nintendo this week. Aside from, yeah, I don't know. We don't really have anything for Nintendo this week, I guess. So, that said, why don't we get right into our quickfire news, shall we? That was the wrong one. Okay, up first. to celebrate the, I believe it's 20th anniversary of Kingdom Hearts. I think it's 20th anniversary of Kingdom Hearts. Square Enix announced a number of I hesitate to call them spin-off titles, since as we've learned in the past, like every title in Kingdom Hearts is like crucial for understanding the story, I guess. And so like nothing really is a quote unquote spinoff title, releasing a bunch of stuff for mobile. But the big announcement is Kingdom Hearts 4. This is the fourth main game in the series, has been announced by Square Enix and subsequently Disney. Just don't know when. A lot of folks seem like it'll be another 20 years before it finally comes out. This game will get the Final Fantasy 15 treatment. So, you know, for those that aren't familiar, Final Fantasy 15 does not operate like other Final Fantasy games have in the past, where, you know, it's a little more traditional, like an action time battle. It's still turn-based RPG system. Full-on action RPG, doing a lot of aerial tricks and maneuvers. This time, using the Keyblade to jump around all over the place. Sora using the Keyblade everywhere. And appearing in, like, a much more modern, real-world type location. With normal shoe proportion, or much more normal shoe proportions. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe if it's using Final Fantasy XV's exact engine, might take less time to do. Unclear. Hopefully it comes out within the next 2 decades for Kingdom Hearts fans. So yeah, that's the big announcement. probably the big announcement. I don't know if it's the, yeah, I'd say it's probably the biggest one in our quickfire news this week. Up next, oh no, Activision Blizzard in the news again. Again. This time, despite converting over 1,000 temporary and contract QA employees from full-time, you know, from part-time and contract to full-time, and providing $20 an hour minimum pay, Blizzard is not extending those benefits to Raven Software QA worker, or Activision Blizzard, I should say, not extending those benefits to Raven Software QA workers, seemingly because they've been trying to organize a union. California's governor has also allegedly been interfering in the DFEH's case, the ongoing sort of sexual harassment in the workplace case, by firing the head counsel on the case, which later prompted other members of the committee department, I should say, to resign, citing that the governor was kept demanding advance notice of litigation strategy in a manner that was consistent with Activision Blizzard's legal team in the defense of this case. Obviously Activision Blizzard is citing something regarding like union bylaws and stuff as to why they would not extend those benefits specifically to the members that were trying to start a union. Like, they've extended them to everybody else and not like that specific department. So there's back and forth between unionizing groups and Activision Blizzard over this decision. All in all, it's scummy. It doesn't feel good. And it, like, even if it's the case where like they might be legally allowed to make those decisions, it, you know, reflects upon them. It's what, you know, I often talk about like when, when you're legally allowed to do something, doesn't necessarily mean that you should. And this is a case where it's not looking good. It's not reflecting well upon them. And then the governor, that's just weird. Sort of. It does make, you know, if they bring in a lot of money, make sense. But yeah. So that was a report by Forbes, I believe. I could be wrong on that one, but allegedly been interfering in the case, which is also big, right? Especially after the like that settlement was granted. So we'll continue to see how that case plays out. All right, next up, Epic Games. So Sony, speaking of Sony, from the Kingdom Hearts news, Sony and Lego have both decided to make big investments into Epic as part of an initiative for metaverse development and like new and interesting play experiences. Sony's invested $1 billion and Lego has invested $2 billion. So again, sort of the stage has been set for various companies to start developing and are partnering with other people to try and develop these big metaverse concepts. I think it's going to be the way we see it is whatever stems from this metaverse quote unquote idea is I think we're going to see it play out like we do operating systems, in that you're going to have some kind of Windows Microsoft one. You're probably going to have some kind of Epic one and you're probably going to have some kind of Facebook one and everybody's going to look to other places, you know, and maybe Disney, right? They're going to look to partner with as many other people who are interested in the concept, but maybe not like they're willing to sign a partnership deal and provide funding and get their stuff in that particular ecosystem Which again, kind of flies in the face of what it's intended to be, which is just like another sort of internet. So who knows? So yeah, big, big money getting thrown in there. All right, next up. Streets of New Capenna. Now, this is an upcoming Magic the Gathering expansion. Now, you might be saying, Sean, nobody cares. You know, you do a gaming news podcast. By the way, this marks another expansion in which the Magic the Gathering team has sort of been testing the waters with doing something a bit outside of standard, your typical fantasy or sort of steampunk fantasy fare that like past Magic the Gathering expansions have done. So we saw it a little bit with Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, where they did like full on cyberpunk. This is going to be sort of a Prohibition era Magitech sort of aesthetic, where it's going to be like a lot of Art Deco mixed with Magitech, where like one of the cards features like a magical, like a limousine, like it looks like a very sleek sort of art deck, like futuristic but Art Deco style limousine powered by magic. So it feels like an extension of like if you took Eberron and maybe jumped it forward 100 years, but complete with, you know, very leaning heavily into the Roaring Twenties and Prohibition era. So a lot of gangsters, nightclubs, you know, feather boas and glitz and glamour everywhere. Which I guess like Roaring, so it not technically. It's like both Roaring Twenties and Prohibition era. Because at the same time, you have, you know, sorts of like grungy gangsters wearing, you know, fedoras and vests with, you know, undershirts with rolled up sleeves and like carrying violin cases and things. So, yeah. Like the fact that the Magic the Gathering team is reaching out and trying all these new concepts and everything. My hope is that maybe some of that will bleed over onto the D&D team at Wizards of the Coast and sort of with their new multiverse, you know, their new multiverse initiative, that maybe after appeasing some of the folks with like classic campaign settings, we continue to get sort of new, interesting, out of the box type settings that are a bit more than standard fantasy fare. New mechanics in the set will include alliance, which is when you, so if a creature has alliance, it has an ability that triggers whenever you play another creature or when another creature comes under your control. Casualty, which is sacrificing a creature to do a thing. Connives, which is when that effect triggers, you draw a card and then discard a card. And if you discard a non-creature card, it gets a +1/+1 counter. And hideaway, which, oh dear. Let's see, keyword ability. Oh, Hideaway is not a new one. It was introduced in Lorwyn. But Hideaway is when it enters the battlefield, look at the top end cards of your library, exile one face down, and then put the rest on the bottom. And then you'll be able to presumably do things with the exiled card. Okay, so that's not a new one. Let me just make sure that the other ones are actually new keywords. Nope, that's the set. Here we go. Mechanics. So Connive is new. Casualty's new. Oh, Blitz. What is Blitz? Alternative cost. Okay, so if you cast a spell for its Blitz, it gains haste, and when the creature dies, draw a card, sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. Okay, so it's basically a little like Ball Lightning. So yeah, at the end of your turn, pretty much. Okay. Alliance. Shield counters. So shield counters basically protect stuff. If an effect would destroy it, you can remove a shield counter instead of the creature being destroyed. It won't work if the damage is unpreventable. Let's see. And hideaway. Okay. So yeah. All great thematic mechanics. So yeah. Sort of, you know, I think I'll be interested to see if, mark my words, because I have a feeling that this would be the next, I could see this being a new Dungeons and Dragons campaign setting. I have a feeling. I got a gut feeling about it. As their way of doing a modern setting. Or maybe not. Maybe they might feel that it steps on Eberron's toes a little too much. I don't know. But I think it would be interesting. So, I'm going to mark this down. I'm going to write this down as a prediction. And we'll see when they start talking about new campaign settings that we've never seen before for Dungeons & Dragons. And we'll see. Because they seem to be wanting to do new Magic the Gathering campaign books. You know, because they've done Ravnica, Theros, and Strixhaven. You know, because I think, like, they didn't do Innistrad because it's a little too close to Ravenloft, I think. I mean, alternatively, if they're working on a Kamigawa one for, like, Neon Destiny, and to do Cyberpunk D&D, that could be an option as well. And then, like, a lot of the other stuff just, it feels too close to, like, other campaign settings. So, yeah. Like, it feels like Eberron, kind of. Or, you know, with a lot of the plane shifting and everything, like, basically Planescape or Spelljammer of doing weird stuff. Sorry, just writing that prediction down. We'll see. I'm excited to see if it pans out. All right, up next, Witcher 3 Wild Hunt next gen update. So apparently, I was not aware that this was even happening. CD Projekt Red was supposedly working on, or had another developer that was working on doing a next gen update for the complete edition of Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. So I say that wording because apparently CD Projekt Red has taken it back to internal development. So that's why I wonder if it was like an external team that was working on it. They have delayed it indefinitely, which is not to say that it's like been permanently shelved, but it is... They are evaluating the scope of work necessary to complete this, which is more, it's been delayed indefinitely because they don't know how long it will be delayed for. But yeah, so I guess if you were hoping to get this on next-gen consoles, sorry? I don't know. It seems weird, because, like, it's only one generation old. And I mean, next gen just came out, so I don't know. But yeah, so technically delayed indefinitely. but they're evaluating the scope of the work for their internal team. So once they figure that out, they may provide some sort of estimate. So, but work is being done. All right, finally, for our quick fire news. Stranger Things Season 4 has a trailer. As usual, the trailer's awesome. Features a killer, killer remix of Separate Ways by Journey. And we get a look at a new big bad that the, is it the Duffer Brothers? Yes. Apparently in an interview with Fandom, sort of confirmed that the sort of, so like basically all the big bads in Stranger Things have been connected to D&D. Because the main characters, they play D&D, and they need to come up with names for things to refer to them, so they come up with, like, D&D boss names or whatever. So, you know, season one had Demogorgon, season two was the Mind Flayer. I don't remember what the season three... The season three monster was. So season three was the Mind Flayer. Season 2 also the Mind Flayer? Season 2 was also the Mind Flayer. All right. So they had... Okay. So one... So they had one villain over Season 2 and Season 3. As is the case with the two of those, not really very close in... Like, had some interesting abilities that, like, kind of mirrored the monster from D&D. Demogorgon, yeah, a little bit less so, and it was more just big scary monster, and they happen to be facing Demogorgon in their campaign. So that's what they came up with. Mind Flayer was just, it had all sorts of psychic stuff. But Duffer Brothers have said, the villain is Vecna. Everybody's favorite lich, turned god of secrets. So, this is super, super stoked for this season. But also feature a little tongue in cheek commentary from, one Matthew Mercer, for folks who are familiar with Critical Role, end of campaign one, spoilers. The big bad is Vecna, and they seal him away, like, beyond the Divine Gate, and, like, push him back and force him out of Exandria. And he basically shrugged his shoulders and said, listen, I don't know what's behind the, I don't know what's beyond the Divine Gate. Apparently it's Indiana. So just a little, like, it was a little tongue-in-cheek joke that I thought was great. So yeah, super stoked for this. Yeah, go watch it. just go watch it. There's some stuff that I, like, I will reveal that because, like, it's clear in the trailer. There's some other stuff that I don't want to mention because of other events that occur in the previous three seasons. But I'm okay with reveal. Like, you're going to see the monster at some point. But, you know. Nice that they're picking another, like, sort of iconic big baddie. Big baddie daddy. So, yeah, everybody's favorite. And there's also, like, little hints here and there of, like, ties to it in the trailer. So, Yeah, super stoked. It was a really good trailer. I might watch it again just for the Journey cover. So that is going to wrap up our quick fire news. So we're already doing better than last week, folks. So now it's time for the big news in our deep dive. Folks, Wizards of the Coast is buying D&D Beyond. So for those who weren't aware, Dungeons & Dragons and D&D Beyond were separate companies. This is why trademarks matter. So like D&D Beyond was, I guess, allowed to use that. Normally, you're not supposed to use D&D if you're not Wizards of the Coast. And that's why on third-party products, you see things like made for 5e or, made for the world's greatest role-playing game or tabletop role-playing game and things like that, because you are legal, you are as part of the open game license, not allowed to use the name Dungeons and Dragons in like products and things like that. And this is why, because like, if you do, people assume that it's automatically tied to Wizards of the Coast. This happened quite a bit. often led to the confusion of like, I don't understand. Why do I have to buy this book a second time? Because it's two separate companies. A press release came out today. So technically Hasbro's buying it, because Hasbro's the parent company, whatever. $146.3 million cash. Sale is expected to happen Q2 or Q3 of this year. Pending any oversight. I don't know if there's going to be any issue. I think I could see it being the case of, if some sort of regulatory oversight wanted to apply pressure, they could say, you still have to allow, places like Roll20 and other virtual tabletops to be able to use this content. Because like, you can also currently get that stuff on like Roll20 to have it be directly integrated into Roll20. And the same thing is true for most other virtual tabletops. D&D Beyond does not have a virtual tabletop. So, regulatory oversight, if they wanted to apply pressure to this, they may not. As I talked about this with the Activision Blizzard whole sale to Microsoft. In the US, they seem to be a little hands-off lately as far as mergers and acquisitions. Because regulatory oversight, what is that? But what does this mean? All right, so first thing, this means that D&D Beyond will become an official tool set, in-house tool set for Dungeons & Dragons and for Wizards of the Coast. Could mean more investment into campaign management, maybe virtual tabletop. Like, D&D Beyond's been trying to work on that for a while now. Could mean they now have more cash to do so. This provides the D&D team with direct analytics on what products are being purchased digitally, but also what character options are people picking when they're building characters. Like, what do people find fun? What do people find, from a sort of meta-analysis standpoint? Like, what are the most popular classes? Could be looking into, like, why are those classes popular? I know D&D Beyond has been releasing those metrics for a while in, like, dev updates. So, like, they look at it. They look at, and here's the caveat. These might be characters that never get played. Because there, there's no campaign infrastructure into D&D Beyond. So these are just characters that people are making. So if I make 10 characters, I may only get to play one of those characters. But it shows that you know, in their metrics, that at least there's an interest in all of the options that were picked for each of those characters, right? So for me personally, they may look at that and say like, oh, okay, lizard folk and gnomes, very popular. Rangers, very popular. What's up with that? It looks like everybody that makes, or it looks like X percentage of people that make Rangers turn on optional features. That's the kind of data that Wizards of the Coast would be able to get, or the Dungeons and Dragons team is able to get now. Instead of just relying on polls and feedback, they're also able to pull it in from the D&D Beyond framework specifically. From a data analysis standpoint, I mean, that's pretty good. Okay. That means that we might get, I don't want to say errata, but like when thinking about future development, maybe looking at things like that, and figuring out how to either add features or elements that can, you know, sort of like Tasha's did of now that, especially there's the framework for optional features. They could add in other optional features that say like, this is another option that you can take that is exclusive to these other options. Right. Technically speaking, a barrier has been removed with this purchase for including some sort of digital code to be in, or, you know, code for a digital purchase to be included with a physical purchase. I don't want to say that it's likely to happen because there are other barriers to that. It does remove a barrier of before they were separate vendors. There does get into the issue of how do you go about doing that, right? Because on the one hand, nobody wants D&D books to have to be sealed. Cause like that's one way that you would do that is that you would have to seal the books, and like shrink wrap them, so that people wouldn't go into the book, like in the store, or like go into all the books in the store, just take all the codes home with them, you know, and sell the codes or get a free PDF for themselves, sort of a thing. And then when somebody buys the physical book, like they don't get that code, I think also it means that I don't know. I don't know if it means that like suddenly now like they would get more physical product sales if it included a digital copy. Because like right now, you know, there's probably a bunch of folks who are buying both because there is no bundle option, right? Now, if Wizards decides to do a physical with a code for a free digital, now those people do that, and then you lose out on that digital revenue. You know, unless they start doing a, you know, slightly higher price point, and then do a bundled version. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would be opposed to like that being shrink wrapped. And then if you had just the regular physical copy available, but now you're looking at increased production costs because now you have to, you know, even if it's just including a card in the book, that's like not attached in the book. Like that still has to be inserted before the book gets shrink wrapped. And then shrink wrapping also adds cost. I don't know if it's feasible with bigger retailers, but if it's something where you do it with local game stores, and I had this thought earlier today, is you could do it in a way that's similar to promo cards for when you buy like draft boxes for Magic the Gathering, right? I don't know if it's an official policy or if it's just like certain store policies or whatever of like, if you buy a draft box, you get like a free promo card that goes with it. They could do that. They could just have like a card that has the code on it and they're kept behind the counter. And it's, if you buy a physical book, you know, you bring it up and then the person at the counter says, oh, okay, you know, here's this card, boom. And then you get it at checkout. Like that could be like, it's a little cumbersome. But like, I could see that being, well, it's an idea. I don't think anything's going to happen. I think they're going to be kept separate because right now it's making them all sorts of money. Unless they move with a subscription model, that I don't know. Who knows? I like my idea of like essentially a promo card, even print it on Magic the Gathering stock. Just like put in an order, and because all you have to do, you know, they make all the extra arena cards for Magic the Gathering. So like, in order to fill out booster packs, like those are a waste. So yeah, why not just hit, you know, do a full sheet of them and then you just print on, you know, scratch off code. Even you could do it that way. And if, you know, if you don't want to lose, like even have it be at a discount, you know, I mean, have it be that if you purchase a physical book, 50% discount, right? And just have that stack with the legendary bundle, please. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes of this, you know, it's, as with anything these days, anytime Wizards of the Coast does something, people are skeptical. I think this is just a natural fit. You know, Wizards had a poll a while back talking about like the future of D&D and namely digital products and services. And there was concern at the time of like, oh, they're talking about like the sort of like, are they looking to build their own set? Like, and I remember commenting at the time was like, I mean, if that's essentially, if that's what you want to do, sure. But like, I'd be hesitant to use a new system because I already have a whole bunch invested in D&D Beyond. And I feel like enough people, like D&D Beyond's huge. And I feel like enough people have invested enough that they're like, yeah, no, I have all this stuff on D&D. Like, I'm not switching to another thing. And having to rebuy all that stuff all over again. Like, I'm not doing it. And so Wizards was like, what if we just bought D&D Beyond? And now at least this also then puts pressure on them to figure out a solution. You know, unless they're just going to take the heat for not putting in a solution for bundling. I think it'd be silly. I think, you know, and this is me. I have no marketing background. I have no business background. And I came up with a solution that like you already do for your Magic the Gathering stuff. And I mean, like, you know, again, you know, big box book retailers, probably not. I don't know, but like, I also don't know. I mean, how many people are like actually, like, I remember there was the box set at Target, you know, had that. I think the box set was shrink wrapped though. So like, or here's the thing. You earmark books that are going to places where like, you aren't going to get that stuff behind the counter, or like you aren't going to. Like, if it's a big enough store, you essentially have two SKUs, two product SKUs. You have one SKU that goes to local game stores, that it has the card detached. You just give the cards to separate, and then the books don't get shrink wrapped. And then you have a SKU where the books are shrink wrapped with the code inside that go to places like Target or Walmart, with a 50% off code. Because then you're still making $10 on the digital purchase, $10 to $15 on the digital purchase. Or more. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a bigger discount, especially since then D&D Beyond would benefit from the income that Dungeons & Dragons already makes. Right? Now, because now they don't necessarily, like, now that they're part of the D&D team, or now that they would be part of the D&D team, they don't have to entirely rely on that money coming in, is they will have funding from elsewhere. So have it be like an extra $5-$10 and you get the digital access. Boom. There you go. And you just have it be a code. I mean, I like this idea. And not just because I came up with it, but I think it's an elegant solution. And I didn't want to talk about it online because I wanted to save it for this podcast. So for folks of you who are listening at home and someone talks about this, you tell them this this idea and you say, oh, I heard this on the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. you do it like promo codes or promo cards or whatever that you get at the store. You purchase this thing, you get this thing handed to you from behind the counter. And there you go. Or it's even, because here's the thing, it could just be you just print out a ton of those cards and have it be like, and just, you know, have it be, you know, maybe, heck, you could even as a, yeah, this is a good idea, right? Say this goes through before the Baldur's Gate set comes out for Magic the Gathering, right? You hand this code out along with the promo card whenever somebody buys a draft box. Or you put in the code, like if you're just going to print out Magic card stock, you put the code in booster packs. Have all those people that are buying Baldur's Gate Magic cards now get a code for either a specific D&D book or, you know, maybe the player's handbook, 10% off or something. You could do that way. I like this idea. Oh, this is so good. And like, you know, I mean, from a business perspective, I think. Now, obviously, there are people who are probably doing market analysis and being like, that's a terrible idea. We're not going to do that. It's going to cost this and do this and that. I don't know. If I had a game, that's what I would do. Like, if I had a game that had physical components and digital components, or and like a digital version, that's what I would do. Right? And had access to physical retailers. So that's my take. And if you like the sound of that, go tell your friends. And tell them that you heard it here. That was my idea, right? Copyright 2022 8-Bit Adventures. Does that mean it's going to happen? No, I don't think it's going to happen. Realistically, the cynical take is nothing changes and they just take the heat for being greedy and that you pay both. I would rather have that be the realistic take and then be surprised and then be pleasantly surprised if they start doing bundles for things than thinking like they're going to go in on this, promo card idea. And then when they don't, kind of be disappointed. So, also, they have no, absolutely no plans to cut anything. They said, like, people are invested in this. It would be really bad PR to take that away. So essentially, we're just going to buy it and we'll use it. A lot of folks are asking now if this is going to, like, affect, like, DM's Guild or anything. I don't think we see that. Because DM's Guild is specifically third-party stuff that, you know, I think it just, unless it's specifically, I don't know. I mean, now that it's included in there, I don't know. I don't think we do. I think that gets into some weird legality type stuff. Depending on, like, sales of things. And, like, also a quality control thing. Also because, like, you can homebrew stuff in D&D Beyond. I would be very interested to see if with this influx of cash that if things get refined so that we could do homebrew classes. Or at the very least, let me do vehicles. Like, there's no reason that you can't homebrew a vehicle or equipment. And, like, there's workarounds for that. You know, classes, it would be nice, but I get it. I don't know. That's, I know for a lot of folks, like, if you're using a third-party class, like, you can't use D&D Beyond because there's no way to simulate that. You would have to, like, pick an existing class and then create a whole bunch of, like, feats and ignore, like, existing class features. So, yeah. But, yeah, so, you know, I mean, my hope is the influx of cash would allow them to refine a couple, you know, be able to add warlock, like, homebrew warlock invocations or fighting styles or, you know, vehicle. The vehicles thing is the big one for me because, like, there are so many times when I wanted to homebrew a vehicle and I can't. And I don't know if it's because we don't really have a section for them that's available. But I mean that, you know, campaign management would be nice a little bit. Just something a little bit more than, like, campaign notes. but we'll see. I mean, this for me, this is exciting because I think this is a natural progression. I think it solves a lot of brand confusion. And, you know, unless, like, everything becomes super cumbersome, I think because it has such a robust architecture already, is if and when the time comes for a sixth edition, is that they keep this version up and running and then just create a separate database with the new stuff. Or they have, you know, essentially you build, well, it depends. It depends on how different the rules are. The rules would be. So yeah. All right. I feel like we've gotten my thoughts on this a lot. I'm trying, like, and again, like, they've said, like, we have, you know, there are no plans to disrupt anything or whatever. I mean, obviously talk is cheap, but it does not make any sense for them to start mucking about with, like, people's data and characters and campaigns and stuff. Like, it zero sense for that. I mean, basically, Wizards could spend that money and then not touch it, and they'd be gold. Like, that'd be fine. like, obviously, you know, doing bundles would be a good thing to do once the acquisition goes through. But, like, even if they left everything alone, I mean, that just means it functionally exists the way it is now. which, you know, for some folks, like, yeah, they don't want to double spend the money. You know, I get it. And that's valid, right? You know, for me, I don't have that problem. You know, I'll do it. Because, you know, for me, there's a difference between having a physical product and then accessing digital content in a framework for what is basically a character builder right now. You know, and I have the means to do it. The privilege, I should say. So, but yeah, I don't think anything, I mean, the easiest course of action for them is to just buy it and then just let things continue as they are. And just say, like, yeah, we just let this thing make us money. Like, there we go. So, I think what'll be interesting is to see what comes next from D&D Beyond because of this. So, there we go. All right. That takes care of our deep dive. So, really quick, we're going to do quest log. All right, so I did color a chapter one comic. I did not complete Rusty Bucket Bay. I basically got to Rusty Bucket Bay, and then have not collected any of the jiggies whatsoever. So I still got 10 jiggies. I've got the 5 Jinjos, the 100 music notes and everything. So I will do something. I'm still trying to figure it out. I initially had said, like, maybe I would do a gift sub on Twitch. The vast majority of you listen to this podcast in audio format. You know, usually it's, these viewers on Twitch, get, you know, a couple of viewers. Whereas, you know, the podcast generally, you know, gets far more than that. So I don't want to do something that, like, an audio listener isn't going to benefit from. So I'm still brainstorming that. There will be some sort of benefit because I didn't do it this week. Rest assured. You know, or doing something for patrons. I'd be okay with that. Again, still brainstorming that. I will probably confer with patrons, for that. See what they might want to do. Maybe like a merch giveaway or something. Just something small. You know, I don't want to break the bank every time I miss a goal. You know, another thought that I had was, you know, maybe like patrons and Twitch subs or whatever, like, help me like pick, like a local nonprofit maybe. And then every time I miss a goal, like, set money aside. And at the end of the year, like, make a donation to that nonprofit or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But yeah, rest assured, it shall go on the record. I did not complete Rusty Bucket Bay this past week. And so it is going back on the docket for next week, which I will have everyone know. I truly, truly hate that level. So I was looking so much more forward to Click Clock Wood because Click Clock Wood is so great with the seasonal changes. And to finish another chapter one comic. We are getting so close, folks. 3 comics left to finish that book. And then pagination begins. So. Right. Well, that's going to wrap things up for this podcast. If you would like to see more content from 8-Bit Adventures, you can check out the website at 8-BitAdventures.com. If you'd like to help support that content, which includes comics, artwork, streaming, podcasts, all that stuff, you can subscribe here on Twitch, or you can become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. Patrons can get benefits for as little as $1 a month, and they include early access to the comics, so that usually like a day ahead, unless I get really productive on a Sunday. There are about 50 patron exclusive comics up there, and behind the scenes D&D content and more. Our opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. Big shout out. Thank you to all the Twitch subs, all the patrons, and just all the viewers and listeners out there. Thank you for watching. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.